Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to the Raw Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dadley Boys. And Michael Sidgwick here to review everything that happened on last night's episode of Monday Night Raw. Well, before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we're not going to review everything that happens on Monday Night Raw, but also SmackDown NXT 2.0. Oh! We've done my AW Rampage pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on WrestleCulture. As I said, joined by Sidgwick and Hamflet. Hamflet, first of all, how are you, mate? And how good is it to be back and talking about Raw?
I mean, those are two very different questions, aren't they? I'm doing much better. Thank you very much. Look, I've done this on Twitter, but I'd just like to reiterate my thanks to everybody that listens to this, or even some that might not. Loads of people reached out. You know, you guys did. Everyone was checking in. It was a very challenging period. A number of family emergencies all at once. And it's not been very easy, but the kindness of others in our little community is real. And I'm grateful it exists from our listeners. Apart from Ratman, he's just a living nightmare. All of that is to say that, like, I'm grateful for all of those people and all of those messages. And grateful to have, like, my favourite form of escapism back tomorrow with NXT 2.0. Because this show, to answer the second part of your question, was terrible. It was just terrible. We were speaking just before we came on the record. Now, I want to reiterate this point now, because there's no other point during the show that it particularly warrants a mention. I have not been able to watch much wrestling. Like, honestly, just cherry-picking the absolute best bits of the chances I've had. And WWE has not factored very high up in that list. But I thought, well, finally the recaps will have a benefit. Finally, the endless recapping of the things that we've seen just now, or things from 1 week ago, or various things like that will be so helpful. And this Raw will fly by like others without me having to skip. It turns out that the recaps are just as useless because nothing happens. Nothing occurs. Yes, I've missed weeks and weeks and weeks of building to this crown jewel card that, you know, ignoring the politics, looks interesting. There's loads of stuff on it. But there has been zero angle advancement. There has been zero story development. Yes, these matches are happening. And yes, there's been like a tournament, for example. But the things I saw recapped were that the characters doing identical things that they were doing in the weeks before I missed. The draft was what I said to you, was the only thing that I cannot get my head around. I do not know what this roster looks like. I don't know, because I missed it happening. And then I've not really had a chance to catch up yet. And they put that graphic up of next week's season opener or whatever it is. And I couldn't tell if those people were special attractions or not. Nothing happens in WWE. Nothing happened on this Raw. And I immediately feel like the last 3 weeks haven't happened. This is a dreadful way to prep me for a show that I should have been like super hyped for all, again, ethics aside, for a card that looks half decent on paper, should have been super hyped for. I might as well have just watched the Raw from 3 weeks back.
Sid, we reviewed three wrestling shows yesterday and previewed another. And I felt more tired by the end of this show than I did on Sunday night, watching SmackDown, Rampage, and then Dynamite back to back to back.
It's just dreadful for the same reasons we always call it dreadful, this goddamn show. Like, what a waste of my God damn time. How do people watch this? How on earth do people watch this? I liked it when I was little. Well, I liked Turtle Toys. I don't play with them anymore. Well, so why don't we just, well, what?
The Turtle Toys.
Shut up, man. I played with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles toys when I was 6 years old. I don't play with them anymore because I'm 36 years old. And it's exactly the same thing with this garbage content.
This reminds me, actually, I want to say this now because I'm never going to get another chance to. Did either of you two find there was like major toxic turtles energy radiating from FTR when they were really early in the gimmick in that masked crack? Like, in the, when they were doing the little back, the flip stuff earlier on, it really reminded me of the toxic turtles.
In the weirdest best, I know this is bad, but I still kind of like it, way. Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
I'm going to put it out there. I quite like the Super Frogs. So, you know, that's what I've got a problem with. Yeah, this show, I think... finally comes the end of my tether, lads, because we're going to get to the main event and I'm going to do something we've not done before.
Got some broken Adam Wilborn t-shirts to sell, have you?
Look, let's start at the beginning of this show. You'll never guess what it started with, Sig. Juju, it was a promo train. Charlotte Flair comes out. She says, oh, why is there no celebration for me? It's my last night on Raw. Instead, I've got to bloody defend my title against some rookie like Bianca Belair. She said there's a conspiracy against her. I mean, Belair, that's not even technically part of Raw yet. To be honest, I kind of agreed with you there. There were all this thing about, like, oh, after Crown Jewel, that's when people change rosters, except for Bianca Belair and the Street Profits and anyone else who just fancy just moving around all over beforehand. Anyway, she says... People say I'm the entitled one. Bianca Belair is getting two title shots within a week. She said, look, Belair can't beat her. Get to the back of the line. And then guess what? Bianca Belair, she interrupts, gets a great reaction. She says, this isn't conspiracy. This isn't favoritism. This is deserved. I was going to beat you a few weeks ago, reminding us that, yes, they had a match, I think, literally 14 days ago. But Becky Lynch, of course, got involved. She said, look, I won't be a problem for you soon because you don't even go here anymore after tonight. She planned on, you know, taking both belts and winning both of them and having them both on her arms by the time she gets back to Raw next week. She asks Charlotte how that sounds. Charlotte goes to attack her. They go back and forth. She gets her up for a KOD. Charlotte gets out of it. But in the end, Belair knocks Charlotte Flair off the apron. Handful, it's like you've never been away.
God. I mean, right. A positive first, a slim one. Come back, and at least I know that Charlotte Flair's a heel this week. I don't expect that next week. We'll just get what we get with her next week. But I knew she was the baddie. So that was nice. Like, they're often so unclear with her that it was nice to sort of have this main event that they put a big graphic up that our cool main event when, you know, Bianca Belair is so popular that they know that at least Charlotte Flair can play the heel and lean into that sort of stuff without worrying that she's alienating everybody. As I said at the start, I've only really been able to cherry pick some of the freshest wrestling fruits. So I personally cannot think of a better example of a number one contender cutting a promo promising to give her best and win a world title. I can't imagine another one has taken place in wrestling over the last few days that has just generated all sorts of buzz and positivity at how believable it was and the conviction of that babyface working to win the big one. I mean, here she was talking about her blood, her sweat and her tears and her EST shit. Like, I can't imagine that there would be another promo out there that was anything like this. Certainly if there was, like, the comparison would be laughable and humiliating. So it's a good job that there isn't. Because, and they've got this spoiler, she doesn't keep her promises. So nice one, WWE. Ahead of a second title match this week, the babyface has already proven to be a massive failure. What a nightmare this was. What an absolute nightmare. Boring stuff, boilerplate Raw opening, just terrible on its own terms. Because for all that Charlotte did all this big villainous stuff, as if to set up that, well, she's not going to leave Raw. She's going to SmackDown, isn't she? That was the point of all this. Yeah. She's not going to leave Raw with the belt. You do this big villain thing to say, and now look at me, I'm a top of the world and I'm going to take this belt with me. She is. Like, they're just going to do the New Day Street Profits swap next week. Bianca Belair has failed profoundly at solving this problem and she's promised that she would. So that's awful. But Belair's delivery was useless. They've reduced her to the lame, pandering WWE babyface. These two once... And, like, there was a lot I liked about the match later on before they killed it all. But these two wants, remember that first time that we heard that you don't even go here line was when this was, like, really hot on NXT when Charlotte was going to challenge her, well, was coming to NXT after winning the Rumble and Bianca Belair was aggrieved because she was awesome on that show. It was like how dare you? She had all this confidence and self-belief that she didn't need to pander to Charlotte Flair. She was doing that here, and that was 2 years ago. She was putting herself in a box. I'm going to do my best to beat you, like this giant villain. She was weaker here than she was in Full Sail 2 years ago when she was lambasting Charlotte for daring to step to her in Full Sail. I cannot believe the regression of this character and how quickly it's occurred as well, because basically, for all I've seen at least, this has happened pretty much as a result of her losing the title to Becky Lynch. Everything was going along just about okay, and she loses the title, and now she's here. A total disaster of an opening segment.
I mean, it's just a total waste of time because we know they're wrestling later. They could just do this in a pre-tape at some point during the night to build it if you need to build it again. It was just a total and utter trope waste of my goddamn time. And if you had told me yesterday, right, inside scoop, got the scoop for you. At the beginning of Raw, Charlotte Flair's going to cut a promo, Bianca Belair's going to interrupt, and it's just basically to remind the audience that they are, in fact, working a main event together. I would say, all right, okay, is this what happens? Charlotte Flair scripted to be a domineering bitch by male writers, and does Bianca Belair do a Mean Girls reference, and that's it? And the answer will be, yeah, actually, yeah.
Yeah, not good. But at least we got a main event that had been pre-planned. Small mercies. I'm giving them the modicum of credit for that one, at least. Nope.
Well, you know what was good about EastEnders? They've had a storyline this week. Yeah, good. That's what's, yeah.
Right, we go backstage before the King of the Ring semi-final, and Kevin Patrick's there. Xavier Woods is talking about how important this evening is. He wants to follow in the footsteps of the likes of King Mabel, King Ken Shamrock, and King Evil Gear. Kofi Kingston says, Martin Luther King had a dream, but Woods' dream is to be king. Woods says he plans on wearing the crown on Thursday, and they do the whole Hail King Woods gimmick. I enjoyed all these two, and I just thought, oh, please, please don't ruin this, because we anticipated a Jinder Mahal win on the preview. So at least you did, Sid, I suppose.
Yeah, but I'm very cynical. And because I'm cynical, I will predict that Finn Balor turns heel on Thursday. Ooh. Because it's just the way they book. Look, I was wrong. I'm happy to admit that I'm wrong. I have this weird insistence that I have to be right for some kind of narrative. They weren't quite as cynical as I thought. Yes,
exactly.
If Finn Balor wears his rainbow shirt on Thursday, I'll get booed anyway, so it's the right place to turn.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
My pick for King of the Ring, The Undertaker, for the piss trophy last time. So, we got the semi-final. It was Xavier Woods versus Jinder Mahal. Jinder Mahal can only wrestle one type of match. Xavier Woods is in control initially. Mahal fights back, hits him with a side slam, hits him in the face, and then tosses him to the outside into the steps as we go to a break. When we come back, Mahal in control, hits a gut buster, gets a two count. Eventually, though, Woods fights back, hits a thrust kick, knocks Shanky off the apron. He comes off the top as Kofi Kingston's dealing with Shanky and Veer. This is the last time there'll be Jinder's heavies. And as a result of that, Woods comes off the top. I think he's going for a double axe handle. But Mahal catches him. And guess what? Yeah, he hits the Colossus. But thankfully, he's too close to the ropes. Woods can grab the bottom rope and break the count. He doesn't get pinned. Mahal, thank Christ, doesn't go through to the final of King of the Ring. Instead, Woods, they're fighting on the top, fights off Mahal, knocks him down, hits that flying elbow drop. 1, 2, 3. Xavier Woods is heading to the finals of King of the Ring, and he celebrates post-match. Doesn't touch the crown, but he just put the robe on and hold the scepter, and Kofi does that thing where it's like waving in the wind. And I thought, dreams can come true, Sid, you're here in WWE.
Yeah, dream matches can't. This suck. I mean, the same old Jinder Mahal stuff. He very awkwardly attempts the most basic and drab match you've ever seen in your goddamn life. That we are, athletically, storytelling, depth-wise, range-wise, we are on other channels and in other promotions leagues beyond this tripe. And as a result, I couldn't care less. Look, Xavier Woods is happy for now. And I like Xavier Woods. Otherwise, I'm shrugging.
I thought Woods was particularly good here because we know Mahal to be boring, like really, really dull. But I thought he was quite bad here as well. this was sort of the wrestling match equivalent of that, a gif where from The Simpsons where Martin Prince is dancing around Nelson Muntz, and Nelson Muntz's body doesn't move at all, and Martin Prince just moves the whole time, like throwing roses and things like that. Xavier Woods was, this wasn't like Bret Hart, Tom McGee or anything. Jinder Mahal is obviously competent, but he looked like he was having a particularly bad, he was looking like he was having a particularly bad night at being, what was it, what was Minoru Suzuki's line about them being drab?
Grey, boring lump of trash.
Yeah, like he was a greyer, lumpier, trashier version of himself than ever. Weirdly, which like only made Xavier Woods' task look harder, but all the more impressive that he was, honestly, it did. It felt like he was wrestling a mannequin at points, and he was being so exciting and wanting to elevate this tournament semi-final to mean more than it was, because he cares such a great deal about this tournament, that I was marveling at Woods. But this is what we like, that's analytical viewing rather than like taking something for the art that it's intended to be. I wasn't watching this match thinking, oh no, I wasn't like dragged into the drama. I was just quite impressed by Woods' personal artistry in this. I'd love him to win. Same sort of thing. I hope he's happy in his job. But I don't think he will.
Mm. Well, we'll look ahead to that on the preview for Crown Jewel, maybe tomorrow. But we go backstage. Austin Theory is there. He's cutting a promo saying he did look up to Hardy, but last week he was looking down at him when he beat him.
Down where?
Down there! The 24-7 goobers run through, distract him. He's furious. He's in the middle of an interview. He shouts, Reggie at R-Truth, do you know who I am? And Truth stops and says, I have a theory. And he challenges him to a match later, and R-Truth accepts, but he has to check one thing. What's that? Ha! To see if Theory can ask his mom to stay up that late. Got him! And then we got the match. Well, we didn't get the match, actually, because R-Truth came out and said, actually, I didn't accept the match for myself. I accepted it for a friend, and that friend was one Jeff Hardy. Oh, a rematch. Initially, Theory is in control, knocks Hardy down, does Hardy's dance, not quite as good as Sheamus did it, never going to be as good as Sheamus did it on the top rope. Theory gets small package as a result of that. Theory hits a really nice looking neck breaker off the apron on the outside to take us to the ads. When we come back, Hardy's fighting back, he hits a poetry in motion off the steps, into Theory, into the barricades. But when he goes to the Swanton Bomb, it gets countered. Theory hits that TKO and pins him again. Another victory for Austin Theory over Jeff Hardy. Very happy about that. He's already getting booked better than Karrion Kross. And he goes to do the selfie. Well, he does the selfie with Jeff Hardy. But Jeff Hardy then pops up, hits him with a twist of fate, and then takes a selfie of his own. Hamlet, your thoughts on all this?
I continue to be confused as to why WWE aren't just going with Jeff Hardy. Fans will never give up on him, and over is over and over for life, and Jeff Hardy is over for life. And I know he's like, I know he's getting on, and his, you know, his bump card's been like overstamped for years, but the last pay-per-view match with Sheamus was pretty good, and he can probably be put in that position. So I find it weird that he's in this specific story, but I'm going to be kind to this because, well, you said it's a rematch and I haven't seen this already, so like I'm obviously going to be more generous to it. But Austin Theory, strictly speaking from an in-ring point of view, is way more interesting than he was at the first attempt when he was kind of a sub-Randy Orton guy in the Andrade Zelina Vega stable a year ago. I know Performance Center stuff is maybe an unfair comparison, but the work was drab as well. It was pretty drab on NXT. That's perhaps a credit to work, spending some time with Johnny Gargano and trying to find some excitement bell to bell, because he was you sense he's going to be a star, and you sense what they see in him is all these kind of Randy Orton bland polished qualities, but he's got a little bit more to him, and maybe that's down to spending some time with Gargano, because that act was the first time he really felt like he clicked, and his first go around on the main roster was dishwater dull. So like, I really didn't hate this, but just on entrance alone, Jeff Hardy's coming out and these crowds, it's so tragic how dead these crowds are. Like, we're not even 6 months back off the pandemic, like, opening back up. And, like, they're just so bored for such long periods on these shows. And they still care about Jeff Hardy. And I cannot understand why he's pissing about in lower cards. You might as well just push him.
The only thing I can guess is either A, like you say, they're attributing that iffy triple threat that involved Priest and Sheamus to Jeff Hardy's mistakes. Or he's going to SmackDown anyway. He'll get a fresh start from there. So maybe that's what they're thinking, Sige.
I think they just think he's a guy who we can get heat on by winning, because they're not going to go with him in the main event spot. He's a guy who always gets a reaction. So why not beat him? This match was pretty nondescript for my tastes, of which are superior to this product. And look, Austin Theory, it's one of those where it's like, I enjoy watching them push someone that they are clearly behind and like the look of, because it means, oh, I'm not wasting my time here. As opposed to when they were pushing Cedric Alexander for a week after the Hurt Business split, because you just know, what's the point of this? So they're like Theory. You can tell it's kind of worth your investment. He's got a certain dickhead charisma that will serve him well and is not entertaining. So this is fair enough. I don't need to see this match again, like.
No, exactly. That's bait and switch of just, oh, we're going to give you Austin Theory versus Austin Truth. Actually, you just don't really match again. Drew McIntyre, Big E, they are in Gorilla. Of course, they had the nightmare, can they coexist storyline last week and the week before. And last 2 weeks ago, they sort of could. Last week, it all fell apart. And they've reasoned for why that happened last week. You know, Drew apologized, saying, look, I got confused. I got bumped on the head. I didn't realize it wasn't deliberate. You attacking me, blah, blah, blah. I just saw red. And they agree. Let's try to coexist tonight. Before we fight each other at Crown Jewel for the WWE Championship, Big E says, make the best man win. And McIntyre responds with, oh, don't worry, I will. Big E responds by doing his big intro in Drew McIntyre's face, whilst McIntyre does some poses, which sort of tickled me, I suppose. And before we got to the coexisting tag match, we were also in the big office. Postman Pierce, Sonya Deville in there. Charlotte comes in moaning. She's talking about conspiracy or something. And Sonya Deville said, oh, that's not the case. I suppose she should have said, that's not the case. You don't see conspiracy. It's what I did to Naomi on SmackDown, basically. I'm not talking about all this. Let's talk instead about the tag match, because it was the Dirty Dogs versus Big E and Drew McIntyre. And they could coexist. There were some nice spots in here. Ziggler going for the famous on the outside.
Crack at the tag titles then.
Probably.
They not wrestle each other. What am I doing?
Ziggler goes for a paymaster on the outside. Big E hoys him into the timekeeper's area instead. But when he goes after Rude, Rude sends him into the steel steps. Big E gets isolated for a large part of this match, but finally fights out, makes the tag to McIntyre, who comes in, runs wild, suplexes Rude, suplexes Ziggler, gives Rude a neck breaker, gives Ziggler a reverse Alabama slam onto Rude. That looked nice. As McIntyre's going for the tag, Ziggler yanks Big E off the apron. That allows Rude to recover and hit McIntyre with a spinebuster. And it was a nice spot with Rude powering up Ziggler to hit an elevated famouser for a two count. Ziggler, though, then misses a stinger splash, and McIntyre just Glasgow kisses Rude. And McIntyre gets to the corner. Big E's back up in there, gets tagged in, all nicey-nicey between those two. In comes Big E, hits the big ending. 1, 2, 3. And they have that tense moment beforehand before they get the handshake between Big E and Drew McIntyre. As McIntyre goes to leave, Big E spins him back around. Don't turn your back on me sort of thing. And they jaw jack ahead of their big match on Thursday night, Sitch.
What was the point of this?
It killed 12 minutes and 50 seconds.
A gentleman's three with very competent, well-worked action, I guess. Right, moving on to the point of this. Like, the whole reason why can they coexist storylines happen is to artificially engineer conflict from this weird, stupid premise where you just want you guys to fight and ruin the big sort of physical conflict before the match. The reason why the tag teams can never coexist is because when they coexist, it is boring and pointless, as opposed to absolutely cliched and awful. So there's people hate these storylines because neither eventuality is good, neither eventuality is fresh. Can we coexist? Yeah, see you on Thursday. Like, what am I watching? Like, what is the point, man?
Yeah, this was a good match, but like all good matches in WWE, any good match just is the tragic irony of all of WWE's flaws laid bare, isn't it? You've got a tag team in the Dirty Dogs, who I really quite like. And I think we've been kind to them in our SmackDown coverage before because they just do this. Like, their matches rarely miss. They don't often, like, excel or leave you much to talk about or get gift or anything like that. But you sense they would in a functioning tag division. I'll invoke them properly now. Like, you can't dance around it. I think the Dirty Dogs would genuinely fit in AEW's tag division. Genuinely. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not the most exhilarating, but they're very, very good. And they work together very well. They've got tremendous chemistry. Ziggler's style means more when it's grounded by someone like a Bobby Roode, who is thus made more exciting by Dolph Ziggler's style.
I did like the bit where he took, what, I think, Big E into the corner, did the thing where he stands on the second rope and beats him down and looks around at everyone and went, "I'm Big Bob!"
Like, there's a lot of little things they do and have put into this act for quite a while that I think there's a lot to like about them. And they're just pros. They know how to do this in their sleep, and that comes across as well. But the division doesn't exist. So all of that is meaningless. And then the rest is just to echo Sidgwick's point entirely. Yes, they can coexist. So fight for the belts instead of fighting each other. And the fact that this is the route they've gone down when you had a really good, I mean, I would say really good because it was something that I suggested and wanted it to be better, but like a really good narrative driver of Drew McIntyre's had to sit on the sidelines all the time Bobby Lashley's been champion. Like, why are we doing tag partner and mates that can't get along instead of McIntyre's year of struggle? Why has that not been what they've leaned upon?
And his last shot of the WWE Championship before he moves to SmackDown.
Yeah, this should feel huge. This is proper all or nothing from a guy that has been frozen out. And instead, it's can they coexist? Like, WWE cannot help themselves. They do not know any other way. Even when the stuff that they've set up to make this easier on themselves, they've not done it.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Backstage, it's Montez Ford and Angelo Dawkins, and they are ready for Crown Jewel. Sidge's face is an absolute picture here. And the Raw Tag Team title match, they say AJ Styles, that kid in school who doesn't do any work in the group project but still gets an A. And Ford says, well, I was that kid. They want the smoke, but then AJ Styles and Omos come in. They say that they're going to win the tag titles at Crown Jewel. They're not happy. Well, Styles isn't happy. You know, this is the house. Well, no, I think Omo says that he basically runs this place. And AJ Styles like, well, we run this place, but thanks. And they say, look, you know, maybe if you beat up RK-Bro for us, maybe you'll be next in line for a shot of titles after we win them at Crown Jewel. Street Profits think this is hilarious. And they laugh and they say, we want the smoke. And they walk off and Styles says, what were the Profits doing before? What were they prophesizing here, huh? What are you talking about? I don't know. He thinks the Street Profits has got a dumb name, basically. Anything you want to say about this, Sidge?
Not remotely.
Right. Well, instead, we got Cedric Alexander versus Mansoor ahead, of course. You won't have seen this pamphlet, but they unfortunately split
Mustafa Ali and Mansoor. I don't know how we didn't see this one coming, so that Mansoor can have a good match at Crown Jewel against the blatantly obvious heel. And Mansoor gets the obligatory win beforehand here. He faced Cedric Alexander. Alexander gets some stuff in, but in the end, Mansoor kicks him down, reverse DDT, hits that slingshot neck breaker to get the 1-2-3. Post-match, out comes a gloriously dressed Mustafa Ali talking about Mansoor, you know, just being all happy and smiley and how he's going to, you know, ruin his day, basically, when they go to Crown Jewel, et cetera, et cetera. And then suddenly Mansoor gets on the mic, fires up, tells him to shut the hell up. Cuts this really passionate promo, calls Mustafa Ali a pathetic excuse of a man. And Mustafa Ali can't believe this attitude that's suddenly coming from Mansoor. He is fired up before Crown Jewel. I wonder why, Sitch.
I don't know. Honestly, I'm trying really hard to focus. It's like it's bad enough that I have to watch the show every Tuesday. I'm starting to switch off during the podcast. Sorry. Like, I don't know if they were like, Steve setting us up for a joke there.
No, just asking for your
hooks. Honestly, we'll work on a cadence a bit better. It's really confused me there. I'll say one thing. I don't hate any of this that much. Mansoor's like a bit of a creativity about his work.
It's not been beaten out yet.
Yeah, that kind of crackles with a certain electricity measured against the raw curve. And his promo, as generic as it absolutely gets, was somewhat, he believes in himself.
Yeah.
And you know, it's in Saudi Arabia, so I believe in him too.
He's the only hometown hero you can actually bet on.
I love that as well. Imagine just the phone calls between bloody Vince and Bin Salman.
Mm.
Well, you know, do this thing, right? It's called Heat. And Bin Salman does, well, we do this thing. And it's called Making the Country Look Great. So we are going to make our representative win. And they're just having this big sort of alpha male battle on the phone. And Vince is pissed off at the end because he's paying us loads of money. I can't give in to my cruel instincts.
Yeah, like more fools for thinking that this might have been them two winning the tag belts as the big Crown Jewel moment, because that would mean that Mustafa Ali would have to have something nice happen to him. So they're going to do this instead. He gets to have the good match. I'm the same as Cedric, really. I didn't know this was like fantastic or anything, but I didn't mind any of it. And at least this time around, especially with Mansoor as a regular now on the main roster, at least if you want to track this back to when these two first came together, that's maybe 2 months, something like that. They've put the time in, knowing that Crown Jewel is on the horizon and they want a big story for him. I prefer that to how they previously did it with Mansoor, where there's kind of this like sort of, he's the Von Wagner of the main roster. It's like Cesaro versus your favourite wrestler, Mansoor. You know who's on every week? Wow, Mansoor's won the biggest battle royal of all. I love that guy. I've been like really into his career that one time we saw him. Like, so I much prefer this. Like, this is the way to use him ultimately. If anything, you know, I fear for Mansoor after the fact, because there's not another Saudi Arabia show till after the Rumble or whatever. What if he just disappears from view and they don't bring him back again till January and all of this was just for this? Because this wasn't bad.
Sidge, who do you think is going to get more fireworks in Saudi Arabia? Mansoor in this effectively nothing grudge match against Mustafa Ali, or the winner of the inaugural Queen's Crown tournament?
Mansoor's entrance.
Yeah, not even him winning, just his entrance. Now, I've got to bring, just give me a second here, because I've got to bring Hamflot up to speed on this Goldberg-Bobby Lashley feud. Basically, every week, Goldberg says he's going to kill someone in Saudi Arabia, and that man is Bobby Lashley. Let's see what happened this week. Goldberg threatened Bobby Lashley. He said he was going to, actually, he didn't say he was going to kill him. He said he was going to, like, take him to death's door, beat him, and then kidding. So, you know, change it up a little bit.
I was worried because when he said that, I thought, oh, they're clarifying the comments because they know they can't say that. And then he goes,
isn't this literally a bulldog promo we watched just the other day where he's like, I'm going to kill you. Actually, I'm not going to kill you, Shawn Michaels. What I'm going to do is I'm going to just about to kill you.
He's not from Yorkshire, though, is he?
Pin you, and then you know what? And then I'm going to kiss my wife and then kill you or something.
Pervert.
Hamflet, I'll tell you something. I mean, I've told everyone else this. It's been on podcasts and stuff. But the other day, me and Sidge were walking out together from work. And Sidge doesn't want to walk with me. So he said, oh, I've got to go to the loo. So instead, I'm parked right outside the What Culture office. I got in my car,
waited for him, and as he walked out the door, put his headphones in, I went, it's not even my car, it's a rental car.
I exploded at this dad. I exploded. It was great.
Anyway. What happened? Oh, yes. Bloody pointless, this. The no old bard interview where they say everything they've said over the last few weeks just face-to-face this time. Not even face-to-face. They're on a video call, aren't they? Lashley said, you are literally threatening to kill a man on national television. I could report this to the authorities, but I'm not going to because I'm going to kill you instead, actually. He said he's untouchable in the ring. He wondered what Goldberg's son, Gage, would tell his friends. God, I hope Gage gets hurt. I hope he really gets attacked by Bobby Lashley in Saudi Arabia. But Goldberg said, the more you talk about my family, the more I'm going to make you suffer. More than death, Bill. Suffer more than death. Is it okay? Lashley said Goldberg can only hope to survive, and he was going to be begging him for forgiveness. And Goldberg even wondered if Lashley actually believed what he was saying. Lashley storms off, and Goldberg said, safe travels. Kill your Thursday, Bobby. Stop saying you're going to kill people, Bill. You're going to Saudi Arabia. Hamlet. Now you've got the full picture of this. How excited are you? It's bollocks.
I had the full picture at SummerSlam, didn't I? Nothing has happened. Nothing has happened. Like, WWE, they're not going to deliver somebody dying. The pay-per-view is taking place in Riyadh and not the consulate. You know, but like, regardless, they're not going to, like, they didn't deliver Drew McIntyre cutting Jinder Mahal's limbs off with a sword at SummerSlam. So there is not going to be limbs getting cut off in Saudi Arabia. This was lousy. This was like bad pat between the two of them in a no holds barred interview, which like sounds lifted off of one of Chris Jericho's synonym generators for his segments on Dynamite, like the no holds barred interview. Rubbish. Just useless waste of time.
Sid, I'd love to get your thoughts on this because there's been a lot of comparisons recently between WWE and AEW, head-to-head stuff, ratings, etc. So we've got Goldberg here, and then on Friday we had New Japan's Goldberg. Who's had a better week?
Did you see this pamphlet? There was a bit of a kickoff about people going, oh, they're hot-shotting that definite full gear main event between Minoru Suzuki and Bryan Danielson, and I stupid bad face. And someone was... who's this Minoru Suzuki guy? And so on. Is that the Japanese Goldberg?
Oh, God.
Why remind us of last week's awful discourse?
If I think about it, you have to.
No, I don't.
This is the real Suzuki incident, is it? Somebody saying he's the Japanese Goldberg.
Yeah. This promo was awful. Bill Goldberg is such an unlikable old in my opinion. You can see him going, hey, when like Lashley's doing his bit and he's just sort of looking there like it's really just radiates this unlikable smug quality, and he's threatening to kill you, and it's like you're a baby face. You were decent at it in 2016, and then your knees turn to dust and your hands got even stupider and you knocked yourself even more senseless than you were in 2000 when you ruined a lot of people's lives, including Bret Hart.
Yeah.
Kill your Thursday. I want you. Kill your Thursday. It sounds like, you know, when you see like a random like Silent Night, Deadly Night or whatever, it's garbage day. Like these stupid dickheads who can't act, who are perversely amusing, the baddies in horror films. So it sounds like one of these assholes. Kill your Thursday.
Bobby Lashley's going to win. You can take that to the bank. Oh, I'm going to take you to the bank, Bobby. A blood bank.
Yeah, like that. It's like that. Even more detestable, Steven Seagal is Bill Goldberg in 2021. I hate him, and I'm worried about watching this stupid, stupid Saudi Arabia show that if you can park the wrongness of it, you can enjoy so much on a perverse level. I'm going to be worried that Lashley's going to die in the most ironic WWE development of all time.
Fine. The reason why it's no holds barred is so that Cedric Alexander can take the incredibly dangerous jackhammer instead. And all Bobby Lashley's going to have to take is probably one spear. Because that's all that's
going to good that Cedric's going to die.
No, I'm not saying that.
He can't do jackhammers, man.
I know.
As long as the star's going to be all right.
As long as WWE deliver that they promise to take one life and it's not somebody I actually like.
After the beating that you gave me, Bill,
One thing, Cedric Alexander is not ready to face you as Saudi Arabia, but I've got a replacement the fans deserve. I think you know the guy. Gary the Goat Garbutt. Okay, Riddle speaks to Randy in the back. He said, yeah, Randy, I don't know what that voice is. He was impressed the not plan plan bollocks worked last week. He said, Orton said, there wasn't a plan. He said, yeah, of course not. You're so good at acting, you could win an Oscar or a Kids' Choice Award. Riddle said, look, Riddle's very excited to face the Street Profits. You know why, Sitch? Because just like him, they want the smoke.
Riddle is weed.
Anyway, Orton said, look, I've got a plan. And the plan is win and win on Thursday. Good plan, Randy. I like it. And he gets excited about smoking again and walks off.
I wish I still did that. I sure would be something.
I would give this promo a 4 out of 20.
I hope you die. Bill kicks off in here.
Wait a minute, then. Does that mean that Riddle touches Grace?
Video package for Keith Bearcat, please.
Spending a lot of time outside, Riddle. The old dog house. You hear about this, Alpha?
What's he done now?
Oh, he's just left the family. His wife is having a boredom on Twitter.
Good.
Like Riddle was saying, like, I'm having a great time on tour. Lisa Riddle's like, yeah, of course, you just, you've left your house. God. Kids back.
Anyway, let's get into the match. It was the Street Profits versus Randy Orton Riddle, and it went to a DQ. They had a lot of fun stuff beforehand, I suppose. There were some mad flips to the outside. Riddle diving out there to take Angelo Dawkins. Montez Ford doing all those bonkers dives to take out both Riddle and Orton. Orton knocks down Ford with a clothesline. Riddle hits a really, really, I hope this is added to his arsenal. Hits a spinning gut wrench slam, which it popped me huge. Dawkins comes in, he runs wild, hits a double undercut neck breaker on Riddle for a two, but Orton comes in and then hits Ford with a draping DDT. Orton sets up the RKO, but Styles' music hits. Orton's distracted, he turns around, looks to the stage, out comes Big Jawed, out comes Omos. And Orton then turns around to Styles, hitting him with a phenomenal forearm for the DQ. And match gets thrown out. Almost comes down and beats everyone up. And Orton, as he's just recovered from the forearm, gets up and turns around into a roundhouse kick from Almost. This is now part of his arsenal, by the way, Amphlett.
Well, he was a ninja.
Yes, good point.
When will Montez Ford stop trying? When will he realise that none of this is worth all of this? That sell from the Orton DDT that we've seen a million times, he replicated, you know, that brilliant freeze frame that somebody took of Shawn Michaels selling on his head from a Psycho Sid punch from the Survivor Series 1996. Somebody's had to freeze frame that. Michaels is just doing this awesome backflip. Montez Ford created that for real in this match. Like, he just managed to stay on his head, like, as if he'd sort of, like, it was going to drill into the canvas itself off the DDT. And he does this stuff every week. I miss watching Montez Ford because he was doing this stuff as I kind of thought they might split the Street Profits up and just go with him because he was...
You know, they were planned to.
Was that on the card?
They literally planned to do that and then they decided not to do it.
I know that sounds very WWE, right? Split the tag team up, etc. I wouldn't have been against it.
No.
Like, he was dominating the conversation after SmackDown. He was this one guy that would do something every week that you'd want to talk about. You'd want to watch what he could do next. Which was one of the few guys they had like that. And he did this here. He's great. I don't think I get this. You know, I keep saying nothing's changed since SummerSlam. Something has changed. RK-Bro are the champions. Why are they booking this as if AJ and Omos have still got the belts? And then we run Raw. You lost. It's over. Do something else. How is this feud, this rematch feud, being booked as if the first match with the actual title change never occurred?
Because they can't book.
Yeah, they can't book.
Oh, yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's fine. Question.
Hamlet, as loath as I am to tell you something that happened on Raw because it involves me talking about a Raw that I don't have to talk about.
Yeah.
They did this angle the other week when you were off. And it was where Riddle, in his stupid stoned head, thought that he had a cunning plan where he was going to confront AJ and Omos. And the idea was he had a code word that was going to bring out Randy in like Randy because he doesn't care about him that much, just didn't come out when he said the code word.
Right.
And he did this thing where like Omos just beat Riddle in 3 minutes after picking him up from the going full Undertaker Kurt Angle fully loaded. Like pin drop to Riddle, people hate him now. It's not over like it was. He got beat completely in the middle of the ring. And then Orton came out and Orton beat up AJ Styles. And then Orton and Riddle celebrated. And it's like one member of each team just got beat down. No one's celebrating here. Like, what are you doing? So that's something you've missed and something that might as well not have happened because nothing happens.
No. Becky Lynch video package. She's returned to Monday Night Raw, of course. And then we got the Queen's...
Where?
Monday Night Raw. Got the Queen's Crown Tournament semi-final. It was Shayna Baszler versus Doudrop. And beforehand, Doudrop did another unbearable goddamn promo where she went, yes.
Wilborn, I think, hates Doudrop more than Natalia.
No. I hate it when she goes, yes. But she's got some newness about her. And yeah, at least she doesn't have a family heirloom move that she can't execute and gets pinned with every time.
The flatulence of execution.
Zelina Vega, who is also in the final of the Queen's Crown Tournament, comes out to watch from the stage and puts on the crown and all that bollocks. And yet another sub-3-minute match for this Queen's Crown Tournament.
Hey!
They've all gone very, very short lengths. I think it was the first show they had the tournament on, Hamflet. The two matches combined were shorter than Roman Reigns' entrance. So there you go.
Sounds like a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah. Can't have everything, though. Shayna Baszler, unfortunately, did not advance to the finals because her one weakness was exposed yet again. She used MMA kicks and stuff to bat a Doudrop. Doudrop, though, fights back. It's a back suplex. Cannonballs are in the corner. Baszler catches her in the Kirifuda clutch. Doudrop fights out of it. She goes for that running crossbody, but Baszler ducks it and gets her in the Kirifuda clutch. Again, it looks like she's going to pass out, and then Doudrop does that thing where she just rolls backwards. And Shayna Baszler doesn't kick out. And this is the only finish they can ever book for Shayna Baszler getting pinned outside or just getting squashed when she's in a tag team, Hamflet.
Impossible to feel anything for. Yeah, we've seen this finish too many times now for it to be impactful. It was great once, maybe twice in NXT. It was good once on the main roster. That was a Becky Lynch one. And even then, the result felt like a bad one. Yes, Queen. She's going to win, isn't she? Nothing nice happens for Zelina Vega ever. So,
oh my God, LTST.
If this has been the whole tournament, what chance has it given any of them? One meaningless waste of time.
Nikki ASH was...
You didn't ask for my thoughts on the match.
Oh, your thoughts on the match.
I don't have any.
Okay. Nikki ASH.
I've got some thoughts on this next bit when you've recapped it. Something stuck out to me about this.
Well, she had a game of anything you can do, I can do in terms of promos. Yeah, do jabs, yes. And then she went, oh, beyond any boom, zap, kabal, die. I just hate this. I hate this gimmick. It's awful. Her and Rhea Ripley say, hey, Bianca Belair, welcome to Raw. She was there like a year ago, wasn't she? I'm fairly certain she was on Raw a year ago. Well, they give her a cap and they say, boom, zap, kapow, and Rhea Ripley's found her title belt. She lost the women's tag title, by the way. One of her bags got stolen and the women's tag title in it.
Remember when Chris Jericho got a goddamn second piece of life by getting his title stolen? Do something with it.
Nothing.
Create a supervillain character who's stolen it. And Nikki ASH, I've just pulled that out of my arsehole.
Yeah. Sorry, your thoughts. You apparently care about this more than we do, Hamflet.
I don't care about this specifically, but it just stuck out to me. I had an opportunity on a podcast to have a go at Bad Faith Actors for a while, so I'm going to do that now. Remember after WrestleMania when Raquel Gonzalez won the belt and then Rhea Ripley and Bianca Belair showed up on NXT and they had that picture taken where they're all smiling together. Three smiling diesels killing three careers all at once. But all the terrible co-opted journalists and other losers that you hear on Twitter were also, say what you want about WWE, look at this. What a victory. What a victory for women's wrestling. See what you like. Flash forward 6 months. Free hat. Like, that's what this company is. That visual of the three of them holding the belts meant, you guys have had a go at this, meant jack shit. Because, like, look at them now. Free hat, and one of them is dressed up like a superhero. Raquel Gonzalez, your future awaits. Well, certainly what about development? But, oh, I mean, you think, you know, there's proof. Proof is in the pudding. Pudding's a cap.
This was followed by Finn Balor versus Mace.
Skip.
Do you want to skip?
Yes, please.
Okay, fair enough. Finn Balor won with a coup de grace. And before that, it's now time for this.
It's short, it's crap, it's wrestling related. The five-star review.
Nailed it! This week's five-star review is brought to you by Austin Grey Rat. If you want to...
Angus,
sorry. I've got Austin Theory on the brain. Angus!
It's a good frog and slip, though.
Angus Grey Rat.
If
you want to suggest something short, crap, and wrestling related for us to review instead of a god awful Raw segment, you can do so by subscribing to What Culture Wrestling on iTunes, leaving us a 5-star review.
Just read the first line from The Undertaker, and no truer word has ever been spoken.
Yes. Angus actually emailed this one to me. If you can't get on iTunes for whatever reason, you want to suggest a 5-star review, you can do so.
Try, we like the algorithm.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Adam.Wilborn at whatculture.com if you want to send this to me. I know Angus attempted to write this on the iTunes page, but he wouldn't let him submit it, so he just rated it 5 stars. So thank you for that, Angus. Angus writes, "Hello, lads. I'm a long-time listener and finally decided to set up an iTunes account so I can leave this review. This is genuinely the best wrestling podcast out there at the moment. The perfect mixture of info and laughs make any of the podcasts a fantastic listen. You won't get such a brilliant mix of inside accents or inside jokes anywhere else. For the 5-star review, I'll leave it up to you guys, although I would ask that it is something involving The Undertaker, as I have long thought he is a giant shit of a man. Thanks, keep up the great work. P.S. I fully blame Sidgwick for the fact that I can't stop saying...
Great farm, man.
And fully blame Wilborn for the fact my boyfriend won't stop using your Tony D'Angelo voice. So thank you for that one, Angus. Grey Rat. We decided, Sidge, to go for an all-timer promo from The Undertaker, flanked by The Big Show for this. Hamblin, give us a bit of a backstory to what was going on here.
Oh, God, it's just such a favourite. I'd like, thank you, Angus, for this. And obviously, thank you, Wilborn, for picking this.
Just it was me.
And you, Cedric. On Angus's point,
it was me.
I want us to all take a little bit of credit, because I feel like we're partially responsible for changing the narrative on The Undertaker over the years. I think our very consistent, I don't want to say burial, because that's his word anyway, but our criticisms of The Undertaker have been heard by more people than before, and it's just nice. I think we're in a post-Undertaker discourse climate, and I like that. This particular period of The Undertaker's was one of his worst. There's been several. He's been terrible for most of his run, but he was broken down badly. His character that they tried to tweak into the Ministry stuff to kind of keep up with the pace of the Attitude Era was also dead in the water. They'd done everything, like they'd already given up on the fancy cape, they'd given up on the Ministry of Darkness. He pretty much just had the remains of his relationship with Paul Bearer, like linking his character to the past. And he was teaming with The Big Show. Not bad on paper, because there was something of a meritocracy in WWE at the time. And it was like, oh, cool, The Undertaker can, this is the only time I'm going to make this comparison. But think about John Moxley losing the title and then dropping into a tag team with Eddie Kingston. Like, quite a good use of The Undertaker. Look at them. They're going to be hugely dominant. They're going to be unstoppable. You can do something with that. You absolutely can. And behind the scenes, it was there to help The Big Show because it had been 6 months. Vince McMahon had buyer's remorse on the one guy that he arrogantly believed he could not fail with because he was failing with him. Big Show, no exaggeration. We've done this a million times. It turned about 4 times by this point in 6 months. WWE had done a better job with the Giant than Vince McMahon had done with Paul White, The Big Show. And this was their attempt, in their mind, to kind of wrestlers court him on television. Like, oh, yeah. I'm not quoting exactly, but this was Jim Ross and the Ross Report every week. You're fat and you're lazy and you fucking suck. That was every single week he was getting negged. So it's like, put him with the boss of the locker room and they make sense as an act on TV and you've got this tag team and they're going to SummerSlam and they're going to win the tag titles. All they've got to do is say, look at us, we're super dangerous. X-Pac and Kane, you're doomed. That's Undertaker's job for the night. And it's one of his easier ones because just look at them.
an easy sell, Sid. It's an easy sell. We're two giant bastards. We're going to murder you at SummerSlam. Let's see what Undertaker's got to say for himself, shall we?
And Vince Russo, don't forget.
Playtime's over, says Taker. Sit down and shut up.
It certainly was. What a boring little
He says later on tonight, there's going to be a match for the tag team titles between the Acolytes and X-Pac and Kane. Whatever. It's not important. The fact of the matter is, this Sunday at SummerSlam, the winner of that match will come face to face with this. And to make sure that my man was right, this week I put him to the test. I had Paul Bearer call out to California, San Fernando Valley, to some associates of ours at the local 81.
Jim Ross just goes, what's that? He already hates this. He already thinks it totally blows.
Paul said, we're going to need two bikes for a ride in the desert. I also like to picture Paul Bearer in a little sidecar on Undertaker's bike.
I need a big one.
The guy said, you know what he said,
Brother
Paul, we all know that the dead man can handle it.
With my huge cat. We all know that the dead man can handle it.
But I don't know about the Big Show.
No one is doubting the dead man there.
We've got all of the Undertaker's paperwork.
I don't know about the Big Show, he says. It's August. It's 120 degrees in the middle of Death Valley.
Even Fahrenheit, is that insane?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
He says, the only things that survive in the desert are cold blood. The snakes and the lizards.
And the women.
That's what the 81 of them read the Ross report and they say you're fat and you suck.
Paul said, that's all right. And in one of those bikes that you're setting up for us, I want the Big Show to only have enough gas to get to the middle of the desert and not get back. Although make sure that one's labeled because, you know, give that one to Taker and, you know, it'd be really awkward. He tries to drive off and then Big Show realizes he's the one with the full tank of gas. And we all know the... Sorry, I've gone off tangent here. Anyway.
You have.
So we're on our way. We get to the middle of Death Valley. I get out my thermometer and it's 120 degrees. His voice is ruining my throat. Guess what's happened, Sid?
Have some whiskey, boy.
Guess what's happened, Sid? The Big Show's bike, it's run out of gas. And I pull up next to him.
Next to him. Him. Who's that? Him.
And I ask him this question. It's 120 degrees.
It's f***ing hot.
He says, how are you going to survive? He looks me straight in the eyes. Without hesitation, he says, I'm going to wait till you go to sleep. I'm going to stab you in the back. I'm going to cut your flesh off. I'm going to make a coat of it. I'm also going to eat your flesh until I find food.
I could easily eat a snake, but I got to... It's a test.
I said, good answer, big man. Let's see what our survey said. He said, good. I said, good answer, big man. But I don't sleep.
Undertaker creates the most ludicrous of scenarios just so he can no-sell it.
If you
watch this, and I recommend everybody watch it, it's classic stuff. Big Show's face while Undertaker is putting these words in his mouth. They weren't my words! I wouldn't talk like this, you mad old... Just so he can no-sell it. I don't sleep.
Here's the twist. I don't sleep, he says. Anyway, I drove off and left him, and I waited just on the outskirts in the suburbs of the desert. 2 days later...
How long was he going to wait?
I've got to get back to work. I'm sorry. Let me know if a 7-foot-tall guy comes out of here.
I'm working at Expect in Tacoma.
2 days later, walks out with a, why, if you could fashion something, would you go? Anyway.
He's not going to make it. Well, he did make a coat.
Yeah.
He's going to make a coat with The Undertaker. You don't need a coat. It's 120 degrees.
2 days later, he walks out with a snake necktie and lizard boots.
Make a fan.
Yeah.
I prefer a fan.
The Big Show walking out of the desert. Bollocko, apart from boots, a coat, and a tie.
Looks like Bang Bang Bar.
Bang Bang Big Show.
He's got a snake necktie, lizard boots, and he's carrying his Harley Davidson on his shoulder.
Making sure the wheels don't graze against his cock.
I said, thanks for that. I wouldn't be able to get the deposit if you bring that bike back to me. The point of the story is, what used to be known as SummerSlam will now be known as Armageddon. And whoever shows up will be hurt.
Christ. It's one of the best things ever. It's just absolutely, are the Undertaker's good as he? Press play on YouTube video.
Then Jericho comes out and wrecks him, basically. Welcome to Raw is Jericho. He says, this is exactly what I was talking about last week. You two giant slugs have been out here for what, 3-4 minutes? And you've already forced these poor people to drift off into their own little worlds, completely oblivious to what you're saying and completely oblivious to you. I mean, you two morons couldn't string together two intelligent words. I was forced to come out here and save this segment. Personification of evil? Ha! More like personification of boredom. LTST. It was Jericho all along. The only scary thing about you two is the amount of TV time you get, which causes the people to pick up the remote and change the channel looking for a hero. Well, stop changing the channel because your hero has arrived. Chris Jericho has come to save the WWF. Finally, there's a man who's entertaining enough and exciting enough to bring this company back to prominence and make some money for this beleaguered promotion. I'm here to say that Rory Snore is now dead and buried, and long live Raw is Jericho. And now that the Y2J problem is here, the company, from the front office employees to all the idiots in the dressing room to the two biggest idiots of all, will never ever be the same again.
I'm popping already at the Undertaker's riposte. Hey, boy.
Hey, boy.
Hey, boy.
I don't know who you think you are.
I don't know who you are.
Who you think you are.
But judging from that pink fuzz you're trying to grow on that chin there, I can tell I got more shower time than you got ring time. And if you ever, and I mean ever, decide to interrupt me again, it will be your last time, and that's a promise.
People in the comments were like, ooh, Undertaker got him.
Someone's gonna pee.
It's just Undertaker thinks all of this is a shoot and he's got magic powers and DDP's legit stalked his wife. Who's this guy from WCW coming in? Why are they giving him a microphone?
I'll pick the gun there.
Folks are going to take kindly out here.
He's been restless, Scott. I sent you to taking dumb jobs.
Hamlet, did this live up to your expectations?
And then some. And then some. It's like, I love that we can do this on a podcast because we've been doing this over the desks for years. Yeah. It's like, even if you love The Undertaker, you'd be hard-pressed not to rip the piss out of this magic.
So we go to the comment section. Once again, these do not reflect the views of myself, the Dadley Boys, anyone at What Culture Wrestling. A lot of people revisiting this. I think it was like the 20-year anniversary of this a while back, so people were really enjoying it. Harry McKenzie writes, I'm a wrestling fan, but holy hell, I presume Harry means holy hell. Literally none of that happened, Taker.
Melind writes, "Those were the best days." Yeah. And Osric responds, "But this promo sucked ass." Michael McDonald, just on a vendetta apparently, writes, "Big Show is the stupidest man I've ever seen on TV." Didn't say anything here.
Gosh.
Michael Floresca writes, this one got me. "What's the weather like in Death Valley? Is it hot?" I don't think he said specifically. And this is my favorite. Lab Baby writes, "Undertaker was telling a very layered story. Think of both their times in WCW, their WWE debuts, and imagine the F/E as the desert."
The lore of the snake flesh.
To which Ortega writes, "Good for you, it was shit, though." So, yeah, thanks to Angus Grey Rat for suggesting that.
Or near the main event.
We're very, very close to the main event, but...
Sorry.
Look, we know we've got listeners in Jacksonville. A million billion points to Paul White if the next time he works on TV, he wears lizard boots. Even if it's just for commentary on Dark Elevation, just wear those lizard boots. And we'll know. We'll all know.
But yes, Angus Grey Rat, thank you for allowing us to pick that. If you want to suggest something short, crap, and wrestling related, subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us a 5-star review and suggest something. Or you can just leave us a 5-star review on iTunes and email me something you want to suggest. adam.wilborn@whatculture.com. And we return it to Monday Night Raw, where John Morrison is meditating backstage. He's trying to find his chi, and in come the Viking Raiders, just guys that they've just wasted in this segment, basically saying, "I don't get it. Why would you search for chi if you can't use it to raid?"
Did he say something like, "In the name of Thor," or something like,
I don't
know. The actual Vikings, like,
what's this? What the? Is this
John Morrison meditating backstage last week?
It's only the second time he's done it.
Vince McMahon discovered meditation and hates it. He thinks it's like a liberal arts thing or something and wants to bury it.
Something like that. I mean, Miz is doing Dance with the Stars, so Morrison's gotten out with D. So they're like, what can we... Bruce Pritchard's backstage. And like, what can we do that mirrors society? And it's like, you're a fat old bitch and you need to get out of my bloody life.
I've got it! What if we do someone who's like about woke culture? No, Bridge, we've already got that on NXT 2.0. We got Joe Gacy.
We tell stories and we reflect what's going on in society.
Shut up!
The meditator.
It's the main event. It's brilliant. Bianca Belair, Charlotte Flair. But I don't want to talk about it. What's the point? They went 22 minutes. And it ended with a DQ.
WWE is an inconvenience to itself.
Yeah, you said this the other day, yeah?
It's my new thing. I'm going to make it a thing. WWE is an inconvenience to itself. They don't want to do anything, so why should I watch anything that they do?
It was brilliant.
It was very good. It was brilliant.
There was, you know, mirroring of moves. There was all the signature stuff you'd expect. There was kickouts. There was Bianca Belair powering out when she goes for the natural selection, all that. There was a spear out of nowhere from Charlotte Flair that got a near fall. There was all that. But there was the moonsault to the floor, of course, from Charlotte. But what's the point? What's the point in me reading out what happened? Because in the end, I was looking at the time going, not a lot of time left on this thing that I'm legally watching Monday Night Raw on, for me to watch a title change, which we all assume is going to happen.
I was going to say Sky Sports then. That would be convincing lies. I've been on Sky Sports for about 2 years.
But if they are going to do a title change, which they should, or rather than a belt swap, it's like 30 seconds left. And literally, as that thought came into my mind, Belair's going after Charlotte. Charlotte reaches down. She's grabbed a chair from under the ring. She twats Belair with it. DQ, match gets thrown out. Yes, Bianca Belair wins, but the title doesn't change hands on a DQ. And yes, Belair stands tall because she hits Charlotte with the chair a few times. But before the crowd can even realize there hasn't been a title change, the show ends because they don't want to end it with a no doubt deafening amount of boos on this goddamn show.
There were moments where I thought, I can get halfway into this, I think, because it's actually quite thrilling how they've subverted. Well, I think genuinely they've done really well with Bianca Belair's matches, especially at the Papes, where they get over her strength and they sort of know how to build matches around every one of her babyface characteristics. And she has them in abundance. She's really good. She's really, really great. Bianca Belair. Loving the subversion of Charlotte Flair, like being, you know what, I'm really strong as well. I was like, oh, this is actually pretty great. It's a really good story beat. It's really well worked. You're probably going to get a title switch, and I don't care about the title, but, you know, I'm not watching it glazed out in the eye.
Yeah.
And then, then they're doing a belt. So, WWE is an inconvenience to me and indeed itself. I hate it.
Hamlet, anything you want to say about this?
Well, you can't believe it, but you can. That's the thing, isn't it? Like, you can't believe they would book a match like this to be as good as it was for that finish over that runtime, but you absolutely can because it's WWE. This is not even the greatest crime they'll commit this week.
It's just the fact that Andy, I think, tweeted about this, and I saw people saying to him, "Come on, Andy, stop being so negative. We all knew we weren't getting a finish to this match.
Why book it then?
Why watch?"
It's the weirdest thing, man. There is a certain portion of WWE fans who don't get that drama and finality is a thing. They don't understand that that's what it's meant to be about. Why would I pick up a book knowing that I'd been up at the printers and the last chapter was missing? Would I ever do that?
Look at what's happened to Game of Thrones in the subsequent year or whatever. I think it was a year or a couple of years ago. A couple of years ago.
Reddit Office Discourse.
About how fast that's gone from like an all-timer. Like the missus the other day was like, oh, I'm going to rewatch Game of Thrones from the beginning. And I was like,
why?
Because I've there's loads of TV shows I'm meaning to watch. And like, I've always heard great things about Dexter. But all I ever hear is, yeah, it's great right up until the end. So why invest in it? The same applies to wrestling. Same applies to wrestling shows in particular. Like,
well, WWE shows.
Yes, I mean, that's what I mean. But
sports entertainment shows.
Sports entertainment, exactly. Because it's just infuriating this that people now just accept, oh, well, come on. You know, they said there's going to be a trilogy of films. So why did you expect that this first film was going to be any good whatsoever? No, it's meant to be good because then it hooks you into the next film or whatever it is you want to watch. What a bollocks.
They're telling stories.
They've savaged. I can only put it down to the youth or, I guess, naivety of some of their fans. I mean, youth and WWE fans, but you know, like they've absolutely savaged countless dream matches that don't yet exist because of situations like this. I agree with Cedric. Like, I want to echo his points about the quality of this match. It was absolutely terrific. These have got tremendous chemistry. They've had great matches in the past, they work off each other so well. Charlotte Flair is, in one respect, the perfect base for Bianca Belair's strength. And then, yeah, going like for like, there's a real, like, ultimate challenge energy, the Hogan Warrior energy, the way these two wrestle, albeit for the modern way. So it's just far more exciting, and there's far more that you can fit in to a match like this. This wasn't, I don't want anyone to think this was like 22 boring minutes, because it was totally the opposite. But the finish renders all those minutes pointless, if not boring. And there are going to be countless other matches like this where the quality of the wrestler or the quality of the pairing should theoretically be amazing. And a bunch of people are going to go, well, but why should I care? Why should I care? I did catch Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch. And I thought that was great too, from SmackDown last week. I thought that was really good too. And I was amazed that they delivered a finish. And you're thinking to yourself, right, have they actually understood, because of just how important television is, that you cannot completely incinerate what remains of your loyal audience? You're going to give them a finish. The very next show, they go and do this. So yes, they have. Yes, they have done that. Like the Banks and Becky match immediately becomes the exception to the rule rather than anything that you can actually build off the back of. You can't use that as an example, because in the very next Raw, they deliver this finish. And it's at the end of the show as well. They'd not thought, is this really the way that we want this episode to go off the air? They're like, they don't care about that either. You're absolutely foolish if you think this. Like, I love this wrestling war stuff, but you're mad if you think that WWE is going to get better as a result of it, because this is the WWE regardless.
Yeah, what a lot of bollocks. Did the Raw Women's Championship change hands? No, but no one lost anything except Raw, which hopefully lost more viewers because they keep booking this tripe. Anyway, I need something to cheer me up. So join us this afternoon. We've got a fun NXT 2.0 preview coming your way. A load of games, basically. It's like the being at school just before Christmas. We got the Tony D'Angelo Predictor, and we got the Lash Legend Predictor, and we got the new gimmick Predictor coming your way. And I suppose we'll maybe talk about some other matches that have probably been advertised or something. If we've got time, we'll try and squeeze that in anyway.
Tony D'Angelo's in action.
Tony D'Angelo's going to make someone sleep with the goddamn bitches again. He hasn't named his finish, has he? As far as I know.
Nope. Get Black's wrestlers naming their finishes these days. Malakai Black's not done it.
No.
Adam Cole's...
We still don't really know what Adam Cole's... I think it's lowering the boom, but we don't really know hitting the boom or something.
I don't know if it's what the fancy way that... Whatever. I need my tea. I mean, I'm a dinner.
Anyway, let us know your thoughts on Monday Night Raw on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Watch, they can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
Follow Michael Sidgwick at
M Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. And watch there, of course. Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, just like Angus Grey Rat did. And suggest something short, crap, and wrestling related for us to review instead of a god awful Raw segment. The NXT 2.0 preview coming your way later on today. But for now, this has been the Raw review. My thanks to the Dudley Boys. Thank you for joining us. And we will see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.